This is Red Eyes Radio.
Live from the west coast of Sweden. I want to thank everyone for tuning in today. And we have had a couple of issues here. The first thing I would like to bring up is regarding the daylight saving time. And so everybody tuning in from either Sweden or Europe or every other country who has daylight saving time should consider that this show now begins 1 hour later. So it's a surprise to me too here. So we'll try to work those things out as we go along here. And we've had a bit of a trouble with a few of the songs today. So we won't be able to do any breaks here at the beginning. So I'll try to patch things up as good as I can here. So I hope everybody out there who's tuning in live or through the archives in the future, bear with me here as I ramble through this second broadcast. As you know, the first debut was last week, and I'm still learning here, catching on to things. So as I said, I hope everybody out there will have patience with me here. So okay, we got that stuff sorted out about the daylight savings time. I can add that I'm going to update the times on the site for this also for you guys in Europe and whatever other continents out there who are tuning in and who have daylight savings time. So okay, let's see. It's been another crazy week in the news, and I've been following things as good as I can at my site, Red Eyes, of course, which the name for this show is derived from, Red Eyes Radio. So everybody out there who hasn't seen the site or haven't been there can just pop over there right away. You can go there simply by adding www and red-eyes.net. That's red-ice.net, and you'll get to my site, and right at the top there I have a banner, Red Eyes Radio, so just click that, and from there you can look at today's show, because I have a few things lined up for today, a few links there and a few interesting points that I would like to go through today. So anyone online, just pop over there and go to the Red Eyes Radio down at the bottom page there. You'll see Red Eyes Radio 9, 11 and beyond, because I was thinking we should, you know, ride the wave, so to speak, on the issues that was happening by the end of last week and beginning of this week regarding Charlie Sheen's comments on 9/11, because we have had some fuss about that. So there are lots of stuff going on there, and this was, of course, this all began with an interview that Alex Jones did with Charlie Sheen on Monday, I think, last week, and then he was back again on the 27th or something like that. Anyway, the important things began afterwards, because CNN brought up the issue on a show called Showtime Tonight, and you can actually look at that clip, a second appearance by Alex Jones on CNN, if you simply, again, I'll go over this one more time for you guys who have gone online but can't find the site or the page yet. So just go to redeyes.net, click on the Red Eyes Radio banner at the top, and then simply scroll down a bit on that page, and you come to little blue box there with containing today's date and today's show name, which is, of course, Red Ice Radio 9/11 and Beyond. So just click that, and a new page will open up with a few links. And under links and sources to the program, right under there, we got a clip of Alex Jones' second appearance on Showbiz Tonight. So you can take a look at that later on, or whenever, because it's a bit central to the discussion we have here today. So take a look at that. And the fact was that Charlie Sheen was just he came on Alex's show and just regurgitated a few of the most basic stuff about the discrepancies in the official story and the things that doesn't add up, and by any means it wasn't all the information about this stuff, and there's simply so much now, so much information that and he and Charlie Sheen brought up just a few of these points. So but still there were good, you know, there were good comments to the stuff. Just basic things like how a pilot can maneuver a plane like that, and how it seems like you know, a few people with box cutters and a guy in a cave in Afghanistan with a laptop can do all this stuff. So and before I continue any further, I wish to say that I am certainly not an expert on these things. I've just been looking through them and following them along with interest on my site, and I haven't, in all sincerity, covered it so much, because I think there are a lot of sites out there who do this work excellently. Of course, Alex Jones does this great, and you know, David Icke and Jim Morris and Webster Tarpley, and there are a bunch of other folks who do this excellent, and who have written books about this stuff. So this is just for all of you who are new to this stuff. This isn't just my rantings here, because these are just a few of the points. So okay, what can we say about it? It was, from my point of view, I think that this story has an awful lot of holes in it, and it's worth looking at it again if you haven't, because it's important. I mean, if you do care about the truth and what is going on, it's important that we can look at all things, and we have to discover the reasons behind them if we are to understand them properly. And as things seem at this moment right now, the explanation that 19 Arabs on their own managed to you know, control the entire United States Air Force defense, and no jets were scrambled, and fly and do these amazing maneuvers with the planes striking these buildings, it's just it's like Charlie Sheen said, that seems to me to be the conspiracy theory at this point anyway. And another important thing to keep in mind here is simply that there are, what is being offered is not the truth here. From Charlie Sheen's point of view, and from many others, of course, also, it is not the 100% truth. It is what is pointed out here is just the discrepancies in the official story, or the holes in the official story, the things, you know, that doesn't fit the big picture to make everything add up, and contrary to that, on the opposite side of that, you have an official story which offers basically 100% of what happened that day. So we have these two sides, so to speak, opposing each other. And we gotta think about this, because we are not offering 100% of the truth or the truth here, so to speak. It is only the things that doesn't fit the picture. So what are a few of these points that doesn't fit? There are I mean, there are many, there are so many things to bring up about this. So it's almost like, you know, you get stuck because there are so many things here. But what can be said is that steel buildings before never have collapsed by fire. We have had several. In 2005, we had the Windsor Tower, I think, in Madrid on fire for, I don't know how many hours. It was many, many hours anyway. And of course, it didn't collapse. And we have numerous other things that are brought up by many of the researchers who've done this research on 9/11. And the fact is, so far, simply that steel buildings never collapsed before by fire. It has actually only happened twice in history, and both of those times it's on September 11th, and that is World Trade Center Building 1 and World Trade Center Building 2. So that's an interesting point. I mean, and then of course we have the World Trade Center Building 7, which collapsed, I think, about a few hours after the first two towers collapsed. And this was also allegedly, the official story goes, that this was also just a few hours, or what should I say, because of a few fires, I should say. And this was allegedly because of a few debris falling from the other towers, hitting World Trade Building 7, and which made it collapse. And I mean, this is a, what is it, 47 story building with lots of interesting stuff in it that just you know, collapsed. And we have interesting comments from Larry Silverstein, the owner of the WTC complex, who has been quoted in a video interview as saying that they decided to pull the building or pull it. So that is in itself is a demolition term, and we haven't, or controlled demolition term, I should say, and that to this day, according to what I know, it hasn't been commented upon further. So it's also interesting to take a look at that, because Larry Silverstein, the owner, of course, he had just a few days before, I think, before September 11th, taken out a new insurance policy on the buildings. And this was, you know, quite a bold insurance, I think. And I know that he pledged to get what was it, the double amount on the insurance, because he claimed that both towers are separate incidents. So I don't know, in the end I don't know at this point how much he actually got from the insurance companies, but I do know that he got at least for one of the buildings. So he made a few millions, I guess, of that deal. And of course, things get even more interesting when one looks upon the fact that there were asbestos in the buildings, and they were claiming that they had to either renovate the buildings and get rid of the asbestos, or simply tear them down. And I don't know how long this has been known, but there are quite a few articles about this, I know, that talks about this fact that asbestos in the buildings were a hazard, and they did have to take care of that stuff. So I guess that is another issue too. And I know that that the fall speed of the buildings is another thing. If we go back to World Trade Center Building 1 and Building 2, that the physics that are involved is almost impossible, because it's a free fall speed on the buildings. I know that in Dylan Avery's movie, Loose Change, which, by the way, I do at this moment have linked up from my site. So before I continue any further, I can say that you should head over to my site and take a look at that on that links page that I've been recommending now for a few times here. So again, go pop over there and look at the, you should, let's see, 1, 2, 3, the fifth link from the bottom, from the top. It's called Loose Change Second Edition, and that is simply over at Google Video, a 1.5 hour long documentary. It's an excellent, beautiful production, so I urge everyone to take a look at that. And in that documentary, he points out the fact that the fall speed of the buildings is about 10 seconds on both buildings. And if one do the proper calculation on these things, that implies that there is no resistance, because every floor, you know, if the, let's say that the top broke off after, what was it, half an hour after the first plane struck or whatever, and the pressure of the top floors that were falling on the floor below, that pressure should be, or that weight rather, should be sufficient enough to simply collapse the floors below in consecutive order, you know, from the top down. But if that was the fact, we should have a fall time that is longer, because you have some resistance on each floor. And I guess that this would be more and more, the resistance would be less and less, so to speak, the further down we go the building, because the weight on top is more and more, because more and more floors are added, so to speak. But nonetheless, it's an interesting issue to take a closer look at. And as I said, in Dylan Egret's movie Loose Change, he points this out, and it's one of those things, you know, that stands out and you can't quite explain it. And we do have firefighters talking about the issue as detonations going off in the buildings. Amazingly enough, there was a firefighter documentary that was being done by the Naudet brothers. I think they are two French guys who were in New York on September 11th doing a documentary on the New York Fire one of the New York Fire Departments there. And they followed them along that day. It's an amazing, well, I don't like the term coincidence, but nonetheless, there you have it. That's what happened. And so they were following around these firefighters during that day, and they, of course, are quoted as saying that they thought that there were detonations going off in the buildings. They heard both the sounds and they felt the shaking before the tower collapsed, and they heard booms, and there are all kinds of things, you know, that we need to look at here. And we also have the fact that seven, I think, of the 19 hijackers are still alive, allegedly, because a few days after September 11th that the BBC News, I don't know the name of the reporter right now, but I know that he or she did her or his homework quite well and pointed out that those who had been named to do this atrocity were allegedly alive, seven of them at least. So that's one of those facts, you know, that stands out. It you can't, I mean, how do you argue with that fact? And again, what can be said about it is, of course, that the official intelligence is simply wrong, and there are other things, other people that were ultimately involved in this. But you know, that's the kind of stuff that we need to know about if we are to solve this issue of this this magical day here. So anyway, I have a little list here I've been writing up with a few of the points that I've been going through here. Let me just scroll down here. Yes, of course, we have the Pentagon issue of the Boeing, because it seems that there is not a Boeing plane to be found there in front of the Pentagon at the lawn there where the third plane struck the Pentagon building. The plane struck the building in the part that was being renovated, so it was quite convenient, I guess, that I think there was a few people, I'm sorry to say that, that were in that part during that time, but it was not at all as many as it could have been if the plane were did strike another part of the Pentagon. So anyway, it's another interesting issue because they haven't found any, you know, big motors or the plane's you know, the propulsion system of the plane and how it's so many things there that doesn't seem to add up. There are these big cable wheels, you know, the big wheels that get cable wind up around it that are standing right in front of the hole. These are in a few pictures that are taken just an hour or a few hours after the plane have struck, you know, and the lawn was apparently all green and nothing had happened to it. It didn't at all look like a huge plane had came into that area, you know, and smashed right into the side of the Pentagon. And the hole is too small, it seems, at this point, because there are no markings where the plane's wings are, and there should at least be, you know, at the sides of the buildings, at the sides of the big hole, some kind of marking or where the wings have been, but they seem to completely have been I don't know, disintegrated or something. I don't know, because apparently the fuel that are in the wings are apparently can't scientifically or chemically, I guess, reach the kind of temperatures that are needed to melt steel or to make these things just vanish, you know. And that's another interesting point regarding why the why the buildings collapsed by fire, because both all three, I should say, because there's simply not enough heat in the in the blast that occurred there to make the steel melt and to make the buildings collapse. So there are kind of numerous amounts of these, you know, small pieces of information that needs to be looked upon further. And I think that what Charlie Sheen simply pointed out was that we need to be able to ask these questions again, you know, and take a look at the evidence and with a new pair of eyes, fresh pair of eyes, and just see where it takes us, where it leads, because and of course one can argue, as I did right after I heard the Charlie Sheen interview, that are we so obsessed with the culture of celebrity that we need a movie star, a movie actor, or to go out there to tell us what to do, where to look, and so the first initial response from me anyway was that this wasn't so important just because it was Charlie Sheen who said it. But then of course Alex Jones pointed out the quite obvious fact that the Western world, at least, is you know, kind of obsessed by celebrities and stars and all this stuff. So I mean, if he decides to do this, Charlie Sheen, I think it shows great courage on his part. And I've heard a few out there who have been quite negative to why Charlie Sheen came out, and even that it wasn't a good idea that he did this, because simply because he has a past of, you know, partying around, I guess, drug use and a few other things. But so there were a number of people, I know, Fox News, among other sources, and The Guardian and a few other papers attacked Charlie Sheen at once on these kinds of issues, instead of going to the points that Charlie Sheen brought up in the interview, and he simply wisely enough responded that he should be challenged on the facts and not on his personal life or what he is doing on his spare time, you know, because he's, as I said, he's just a movie star and he does his things, you know. But it's important because this information finally do get a chance to be highlighted somewhat in the mainstream media, and as far as I know, it was I think the only show that picked it up was the CNN show Showbiz Tonight, and I think they did a quite fair piece on it. I mean, they interviewed Alex Jones and a few others, and the host of the show, AJ Hammer, simply stated also that he thought it was a good idea that Charlie Sheen said these things, because it gives new light to the issue, and people who have never been confronted with this kind of information do become aware of the issue, and hopefully some of them will do look things up on their own and find out what the truth is, and or not even the truth, because ultimately the question comes back to if we really can know what happened that day, because it seems that it has been totally it's so foggy by all the lies now. So who knows what, if anything at all comes out, who knows what the truth is here. So but we at least can find the points that are of that are in contradiction to the other stuff, and we can hopefully slowly build a picture that becomes more and more clear, and we could at least get some kind of perspective on things here, because what one needs to consider when looking upon these things is the consequence of these attacks, and that is what makes it more important, I think, because today the United States are in both Afghanistan still and in Iraq, and that country is falling apart, from what I can read and see and hear, and the official version, as far as I know, is that the invasion of Iraq was brought forward by the fact that Iraq did have connections to Al-Qaeda, who allegedly then performed or did the attack on World Trade Center. So the consequence of the attack is that a lot of people are getting killed, and a lot of soldiers are getting killed, and a lot of Iraqi civilians are getting killed. So that's why it is important to look at this again, these things, because if the reason for this war is fraud, then there isn't any reason for the war. So it should be looked upon again as with new, fresh eyes, because as I go through my little list here, I see that I've written up that the PNAC documents are also an incredibly important part of this. If you haven't heard of that before, that's the project for the new American century, and you can simply go to any good search engine and type in PNAC, that's PNAC, and hopefully you get a hit on the official documents, which are, of course, about the expansion simply of the American Empire, I guess, and a few of the things that was that consequently after 9/11 has happened, and and you know, that the control of the Middle East should be looked further into, and all these things. And I think that the PNAC document was written by Paul Wolfowitz, and I think that both Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld was in some sense at least involved there in the creation of this document. And this was in, this was released in 2000, so this is just about one year before the actual events of 9/11. So, and this has close ties to the NORAD documents, with which also is a historic reference to the kind of behavior, I should say, that this kind of you know that an attack on an own target, so to speak, to have an excuse to either invade another country or something like it. The NORAD documents simply was about shooting down planes over Cuba, I think, and blame it on who was the guy down there? I forget. Nonetheless, it's also an official document. So just type in NORAD. What am I talking about? Sorry, I get this all wrong. And Northwoods document, of course. I'm doing a search here as we speak. Northwoods document, of course. NORAD, of course, is the North American defense system. Anyway, that is what happens when you aren't prepared enough. Anyway, Northwoods document. Just type that in a good search engine and read about it, because that is what this is all about. And of course, it was to blame it. I got a little help here from my big brother here, who says that Castro, of course, was involved in this down in Cuba there. Blame it on Castro to have an excuse to invade Cuba. Northwoods documents too. So check that out anyway, because all these things here are important points to take a look at. And then, of course, we have a few other things. We have the fact that NORAD, as I mistakenly said earlier, that NORAD was stood down and no jets were scrambled that day. And we have flight control was asking in a video clip, I think, or audio clip on Dylan Avery's also Loose Change, that video I was recommending earlier, that the flight control is asking if this is the drill or the real thing as these things are taking place. So, I mean, it's another important issue, because allegedly there were drills going that same day at that exact same time of the exact same events. Hijacked planes that were being flown into buildings, and the flight control simply then asked if this is real or the real thing. So it seems to be a maneuver to draw the attention away from the fact if the flight controls are to respond to this event as a drill or as the real thing. So that it's an incredibly important point there. And this, of course, also goes against the idea then that a few of the official, the public people that have was outspoken after the event, who simply said that they were caught off guard and that they were surprised by the attacks and that they never could have known. I think that Condoleezza Rice was quoted saying that after 9/11, that they can never imagine an event like this, and that is then at the opposite of the information that states that there were drills going that same day. So that suggests that they in fact did know about these things, and they were even running drills on them, because because she simply said then that that I could never know, and it's these are contradictory things that we need to look further upon. So I'm rambling here. I'm sorry. I just try to get my facts straight and try to get things together here. But okay, let's move on in my little list here, because there are a few interesting points left here. And one is, of course, that Bush stated sometime after the event that he saw the first plane hit the first tower. And this was actually, I think, when a little kid was asking him a question of how he felt during when the attacks happened, and Bush is quoted saying that he saw on TV the first plane flying into the first tower there. So that also then is a contradictory term, because it wasn't, according to what I know, a few months or maybe perhaps a few weeks after that footage was brought forth that contained this first plane flying into the first building there. So either he has access to a television channel that we don't, and of course that could be the case here. But I guess that he was looking at the regular news broadcast. So and they never did show that during that day anyway. So these are but a few of the things that are worth taking a closer look at, you know, to try to sort things out here, because as I said earlier, there are so many holes in the official story, and again, this information is not to offend. It's simply the information that is available to us, and we can choose to do what we will of it, so to speak. And quite a number of people then have done you know, movies about it and written articles and another important stuff, you know, people like Eric Hofschmidt and Webster Tarplay, and as I've stated a few times now, Dylan Avery. It's simply because I love his film Loose Change. It's a beautiful production, and it's one of the best made 9/11 documentaries that I've seen out there. So I highly recommend taking a look at that. If you do have the proper connection, just head on over to red-ice.net and click the radio banner. Scroll down to today's broadcast and click on that link, and I have from that page a link to the Loose Change second edition, so you can look at that from Google Video if you have broadband connection, and I highly recommend it, because it's all good stuff in there. You need to take a look at it if you haven't seen it. So anyway, there are so many things that are happening now on this front, and the reason I wanted to talk about this today, of course, was the fact to ride the latest wave on this Charlie Sheen story, and I do hope that more people come out, and they can be whatever they want to be. They can be movie stars, or they can be, you know, your neighbor or your work pal, and anyone. We need to begin to just talk about these things and point out the quite obvious issue here. And of course we have the latest rather strange ongoing court case right now with this guy Zacharias Moussaoui, who apparently have been quoted during those court hearings that he had a plan to fly a fourth plane, or I guess a fifth plane, if you consider that flight, what was it, flight 93 got shut down. Apparently, that was also, I think, one of the planes that were heading for the White House. I don't know, but anyway, this Masawi guy here is, as far as I know, right now in court, and they are trying to convict him of this crime, I guess. And he has, there are a few sources out there who simply state that he is not quite he's not quite all right, so to speak. All things, you know. I read an article by Kurt Nemo, posted at Rens.com the other day, that stated that one of the most obvious lies in the show trial of Zacharias Moussaoui came when a court-appointed physician, Dr. Raymond Patterson, declared Moussaoui was not suffering from mental illness. Patterson made this assertion after Moussaoui said he wanted to fire his lawyers and represent himself. Moussaoui's lawyers became convinced that their client's mental condition, already precocious, was deteriorating under the stress of solitary confinement, and that he was becoming increasingly paranoid. So there are a number of these news items out there now, articles out there, that address this issue of Moussaoui, and I don't know the absolute latest on this issue, and we just have to follow it along, I guess, to know if he eventually is convicted of anything or not. He has also been reported on MSNBC that he wore a stun belt during his testimony, and I have no idea at this point what that means or what he why he was wearing this for. That's also one of these issues that we need to follow up on, because it's just a strange story, again from MSNBC, so it's not an obscure source in that sense. It's if you are of the conviction that the mainstream media reports on things in a truthful manner, then that is the issues that needs to be addressed here, that he wears sun belt. So anyway, these are all things that we need to follow up on, and we need to look further on and see what happens. And I do hope that more people begin to talk about it, and that was my reason today for wanting to bring up the issue here. And by all means, I'm not doing a fair job. I'm not doing it justice to all the things that are out there. These are just a few of the points here, and I'm trying to get across to any of you who hasn't been confronted with this information before. And there's a lot of stuff here that when we are confronted with this kind of information, that we perhaps at the beginning we just reject it out of hand, because it is in the framework of what is considered to be a conspiracy theory, you know. So we might be of the conviction that we shouldn't listen to that kind of crazy stuff, because it just doesn't make any sense. But I think that all this boils down to the issue of psychology and how we absorb information. And one of my points that I did want to bring up today was the fact that how we react to these things, and even what we consider to be proof, because to me, in a way, proof is a subjective thing, and it's only those things that that fits within the parameters of what we consider to be proof that is further looked upon. And even in this case of 9/11, I think that a simple scientific method is sufficient. It's enough. It stands out here. We don't have to go to weird. Weird conspiracy theories, because these are just facts that stands out on itself. And I, It is just like the concept of Occam's razor, you know, that that simply states that one should not increase beyond what is necessary the number of entities required to explain anything. That is the statement of Occam's razor. And in this case, if you do consider all available evidence, then that is an excellent concept to consider, because all these things become, you know, it becomes an unnecessary theory to lay before us. You know, that this very, very highly complicated scheme from a few hijackers who did these maneuvers all by themselves, then we should take this concept of Occam's razor and look at the obvious facts of who benefits on this stuff, and what the consequences of these events have been ever since, and what is happening today because of them. And generally, I don't agree with the idea of Occam's razor, because it is simply, you know, it is to explain. It is a model. We take forth a model to be able to explain reality and what is happening in our world. But you know, that is not always the case. I am the belief myself that things don't always have to make sense to be a part of reality. That is just our you know, our thinking, maybe, or our way of looking at it at this particular time, that we need these hard scientific proof, you know. And as I said, in this case, that works. But we should not, because of that, be afraid to go above and beyond those kind of concepts to realize what is happening and why they are happening. And I just have a few minutes left here now of the broadcast, and I haven't been able to go to half of the things that I would like to bring up. But I quickly, in the last few minutes there, have to address something that connects with this concept that might not at first fit into the standard model of what proof is for an event like this. And this is a few documents that I first heard Jordan Maxwell, the researcher, brought up on a coast-to-coast radio show in about 2005. And he actually has these documents still on his website. And I urge everyone to, again, then go through my site, through the links page that I've set up. And almost at the bottom there, you'll see a scan of a page with yellow highlighting on it. Simply click on that, and you come to directly to Jordan Maxwell's page there. And there are a few documents that have been added this year at the top of that page. But if you scroll further down, this is from a magazine called Destiny Magazine. And allegedly this is from documents from the 1930s from the British Israel World Federation. And you can do a Google search on that if you need to familiarize with that term. It's a very interesting concept and political idea going on there, so take a look at that. But anyway, these documents, I gotta hurry up here if I'm able to squeeze in this. These documents simply state that according to this Destiny magazine, these papers first printed in the 1930s, states that a 6,000-year cycle ends on September 17th, 2001. That September 2001 is the target date for the beginning of a planned global theocratic state, also known as a kingdom of heaven on earth. And what that means and what they mean by that, we should all dig further into so we can understand that concept. But in there, in those documents, it simply states that at the last, I think it was at the new moon, I guess, let me see here, Yes, the new moon, which occurred on September 17th, is the date, the target date, where it is appropriate to usher in this new aeon to end the last 6,000 years. And they have it's a big sketch. If you go to that site there, Jordan Maxwell site, and click through through my site, and you'll find these documents. And it's a big sketch of the edge of the pyramid, showing all kinds of date lines going through, and they have done a model of a cube and put highlighted points of dates across this sketch and this layout here. And according to them, then again, they target the 17th of September, and it's quite interesting because the last quarter moon was at September 10th, 2001, and then the new moon was at September 17th. So we have this little portion here of time in between, where we have, of course, September 11th. And if one considers what happened consequently those days when everything completely shut down, the airports, the banks, I think Wall Street shut down, and a few other things also, it's almost like a reboot of society. It's incredibly interesting. And I should be finishing up here now, and I'm sorry I didn't have time to go to all these issues, because they're very important, and I hope we can pick up some of these discussions in the future. In the meantime, I wish to thank everyone who have tuned in to bbsradio.com. I wish to thank Christopher Morse very much over at creativecosmos.org, and Dawn and Nevin and everyone at the BBS radio station. Please tune in next week. It has been great fun. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Listening to BBS Radio, a blog and service.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.